You're listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. Dr. Charles Laux here with a special guest. It's been a little while. There's been a lot of stuff going on. We had ASTA conference. I had a Masterworks concert right after that, and I just came off of spring break a few days ago. So now it's time to get back into things and spring concert. And so going to start with a great guest who kind of reached out to me, and someone I didn't know but has done some great things and presented at ASTA and the Suzuki Association conference we just came from last month. Proud to present Jennifer Roig-Franculli to you all. And Jennifer, thank you so much for being a guest here on our podcast. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Charles.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Looking forward to talking with you.
Yes. We're going to have a great time today. So I don't know a whole lot about you, but I know that you are an author, a violinist, and an Alexander Technique teacher. So I'm really interested to share with our audience all the great things that you do and all the knowledge that you have, as much as we can get on a podcast, of course. But so Jennifer, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and kind of where you're from and what you've done.
I'll try to put it in a quick nutshell.
Sure.
Well, I wanted a violin when I was 2, I'm told. And I got one when I was 4. That's when my parents found out about the Suzuki method. Uh-huh. And so I grew up as a Suzuki violinist. My mom decided to start teaching Suzuki cello. Both my parents are musicians. So I was surrounded by music. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much had a one-track mind as a kid, as a teenager. I wanted to be a soloist when I grew up. And my parents were very supportive. I was very fortunate. And I did everything you're supposed to do. I entered lots of competitions. I went to incredible teachers around the world, including, like, for example, Nathan Milstein, Joseph Gingold at IU.
Nice.
At CIM, studied with David Cerrone. And I did win most of those competitions. So I was actually doing really well. And then when I was 19, I just decided to completely change direction. And let's see, where do I go next? Well, I got married at age 20 and became much more interested in life from a spiritual perspective, kind of a universally spiritual perspective. So dove headlong and full-heartedly into that and was interested in, you know, life from, like I said, a completely different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And was no longer so interested in music. And after a while, I started having neck pain, back pain.
This is where the Alexander technique comes in.
That's right. Exactly. In my 30s, I was not so happy anymore. I was still playing music, but I had really dropped my soloist career dreams when I was 20, which I don't regret. I have no regrets about any of it. But I did find the Alexander technique. It solved my neck problems and made me feel incredible.
Yes.
So I learned how to become an Alexander Technique teacher.
Cool.
And it's a 3-year certification typically. And now, many years later, I've come full circle. I did my solo violin pandemic project CD album. And I am a coach for musicians. I teach and coach musicians with the Alexander Technique exclusively online since 2018.
Cool.
And I help people pretty much notice how they're getting in their own way and how they're thinking in ways that actually ends up causing a lot of tension, pain, injuries, performance anxiety, and just general unhappiness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. it's an amazing this thing that it is. I took a course with William Conable before he retired from Ohio State, and he was kind of one of the big musicians that taught that, and he taught it a long time at Ohio State. And it even though it was just a semester, it was pretty mind-blowing and pretty revolutionary in my own thinking about how I move and how I sit. The awareness makes a difference in your body.
I'm so excited that you know about the Alexander technique, and you've actually experienced it.
Yes, and he was fantastic. You know, Interesting gentleman, but just a master at his craft and learning about it. And so it was really, you know, felt very fortunate to be able to take from him. And even just for a semester, I wish it could have been longer, but it was one of my electives and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And you are very fortunate. I feel like every music student should have the opportunity to study the Alexander technique at mm-hmm. some point.
Especially it's string players, harder. You know, because we have so much going on physically, mm-hmm. you know, that we can really hurt ourselves if we're not thinking about how we stand, how we sit, how we our posture and you know, the bigger things. So I think it's important, very important yeah. for us.
It's absolutely essential. And I like to think of the most important thing for musicians of all kinds, not just string players, but I like to think of the whole self, the mind, body, emotions, spirit, the whole of the self is truly our primary instrument. Mm-hmm. And I like to talk about something called primary practice, where it's even more important to practice how we are coordinating our thinking and our movements and our attitude toward life, our attitude towards music. All of that needs to be paramount. I mean, it's our top priority mm-hmm. to pay attention and find out and get to know ourselves and observe ourselves so that we can learn about what we're doing, what our habits are that are getting in our way, and then learn how to do a little less
yeah.
so that things can flow and move with more ease when we then bring ourselves to our secondary instrument, our violin or cello or flute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of physical things that get in our way, and there's, you know, a lot of mental things get in our way too that really mm-hmm. keep us from doing our best, performing our best, and learning it the most efficient way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the same for, I mean, your podcast here is for orchestra teachers, I think, right. more than anyone. And so as teachers, we have such a privilege and also responsibility to, you know, to help our students realize that it's so important to pay attention to their well-being. And the best way to do that, of course, is for us as teachers to do that for ourselves mm-hmm. first, and then model that for our students.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us maybe like if you could give us a very small sample of some of the things that you talk about for Alexander technique, that would be fantastic, because maybe some of our audience members know nothing about it and where it came from and what it is. So,
yes. And actually, I should also add that the way I teach Alexander technique is rather unusual. It's actually a form of Alexander technique called Primal Alexander,
okay.
which has been created by my partner, Mio Morales, he's a master Alexander teacher who's been teaching, you know, been doing Alexander technique for more than 50 years. So really wow. knows. And he's been experimenting over quite a few years in how to teach without touch. And that's actually how we met at a conference in Ireland, because I was already experimenting with teaching without touch for other reasons. So ultimately, this is the thing that I feel the essence of the Alexander technique is. Hmm. It's really about getting to know how you're thinking and to recognize that what you think is what you get. Mm-hmm. And every single thought we have, positive, negative, neutral, and we have, I don't know, thousands, millions, billions of thoughts.
Yeah.
Every single thought we have is reflected by the body, whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. So it pays to really get curious and experiment. You know, if I think this way, what happens to my body? And as a result, how do I bring my body to my music? And what happens as a result in my playing?
Yeah.
And so if I can start to notice that chain of events, right? The cause is ultimately in how I'm thinking or my attitude and how I bring my whole self to my instrument. Then the result, you know, how it sounds, how musical I am, or how facile my technique is, that's the last bit of it. That's the end, final
sure.
result of what the origin is how I'm thinking and feeling about things.
Wow.
or I shouldn't say feeling about things, but you know, it's how I'm thinking and how my attitude as a whole is that mm-hmm. I bring to what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. And so you said like teaching without touch, that's a huge thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I remember when I was taking with William Conable, it was always like hands on. And I don't know if that's, that's maybe the original way that it was taught. And
that's a great question.
Maybe people get uncomfortable with that now, maybe, perhaps.
Some people do. Mm-hmm. And just to go back to the origins of the Alexander mm-hmm. technique, and I know a lot of people listening probably have no idea what we're talking about. Really quickly, Frederick Matthias Alexander was born in 1869 mm-hmm. in Tasmania, and then moved to Australia to pursue an acting career, started having a performance issue. When he got on stage, he would get hoarse. And nobody could help him because there was nothing wrong with his voice. Mm-hmm. So he realized that he'd better figure it out for himself or quit acting. And he didn't want to quit acting. So he started observing himself in mirrors to try to figure out what he was doing to himself to cause that nervousness. Long story short, years later, you know, he solved his performance problem. He became very successful. People came flocking to him from all over to learn how to do what he was doing, you know, perform with so much effortless ease.
Yeah.
And a great voice, you know, full expression. And then he realized that what he was doing to himself was pretty much what every human being does to interfere with their self-expression.
Wow.
So he did not have a teacher touching him mm-hmm. to solve his performance issues. He used his ingenuity, his curiosity. His drive to really, really want to become an actor was important. He was highly motivated. He had a mechanism for observing himself. At that time, it was mirrors. Now we have video.
Okay.
Now we have recording capabilities. So we can actually observe ourselves from the outside, but even more importantly, from the inside.
Yeah.
So he learned how to take care of himself and heal himself and become, you know, a great performer. And he actually wrote it all down. So we know from reading what he did, how he helped himself. So he ended up starting to teach people later through touch because it was easier for him to do that.
Sure.
And his students could pick up different kinds of information from his hands. But clearly it's not essential to the technique or else he wouldn't have been able to mm-hmm. make the discoveries he made. So we're with Primal Alexander, we're really curious about going back to, well, what was Alexander actually doing? And he even said, anybody can do what I did if they just do what I did. But most people don't want anything mental. That's his quote.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
It's pretty impressive when you think about that you actually can change things about your body and your whole experience of life just by getting curious and experimenting, looking at how you're thinking and moving and changing that.
Yeah, that's really, really cool.
That's really fun, I have to say. I love teaching like this.
Yeah. So tell us, I know that you're also an author. Could you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes.
And all that entails. It's called Making Great Music with Ease. And I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, actually, and since we are recording video, here it is.
All right.
Make Great Music with Ease, The Secret to Smarter Practice, Confident Performance, and Living a Happier Life.
I love it.
Yeah, thank you. So this was one of my bucket list items, and just a lot like the CD was during the pandemic, I did that. And,
when did you finish the book?
I finished it. Well, it came out in January of this year, 2024.
Oh, so okay, fantastic.
It's pretty new, and it was the hardest thing that I've ever worked on, and it was such a relief to finally get it done and get it out there. And I've just been blown away by the positive response. Mm-hmm. It's become a number one bestseller on Amazon.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was number one in two categories. It was number one in string instruments for a while, and also in musical philosophy and social aspects. And then it was number two and number four, basically under 5 in all 6 categories. So I just was so overwhelmed.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's basically, it's obviously for musicians, but all kinds of musicians, all instruments, all levels. And the book is in 3 parts. The first part is all about the challenges that musicians face. And I've put that into different categories. We've talked about the Alexander technique, but I actually put the Alexander technique into a bigger context. So I call my work the Art of Freedom Method for Conscious Living and Masterful Artistry.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So there are 5 life pillars in the Art of Freedom Method, which are mind, body, spirit, purpose, and artistry. And actually, purpose is the first one. I said them out of order.
Okay.
But part one of the book is all about, you know, the ways that we can get in our own way when we neglect our purpose or forget to consider why we're doing what we're doing. And we could get disconnected from, you know, why we originally became musicians, which usually has to do with loving music or having some kind of a passionate, you know, desire for self-expression through sound. And so I think it's really important to get connected again to our purpose, even if we don't really know what it is, to get curious about, well, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why am I a teacher, for example?
Right. Why am I put up with all these kids?
Yes, and why am I putting myself on a stage in front of all these people? So purpose is really, really number one. And then we have the mind, you know, all the mental gymnastics that we do, the negative self-talk that can get in the way. And that
for sure
sort of dovetails with emotional stuff like imposter syndrome,
yeah,
feeling like we're never good enough. And I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate because it's such a common problem.
It's super common. And I think, you know, people think, oh, well, you know, you're successful, you probably never doubt yourself. And it's like, no, it's always a doubt. There's always, you know, you get invited to present or you get invited to do something. You're like, they're going to know everything I'm already talking about. They're going to know everything. And I don't, you know, you get those self-doubts and it's real. No matter how, I mean, I'm teaching 28 years now and it happens to me too all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
It doesn't matter what your skill level is.
Right.
I work with people who are beginner amateurs, you know, and I work with people who are elite professionals, like, you know, teachers at Juilliard and, you know, and we all have the same self-doubt that crops up now and then, and sometimes more often than we'd like.
Yes.
And that fear, anxiety, you know, fear-based thinking, all of that translates into physical tension. And the problem with physical tension, I mean, there's nothing wrong with tension. We need it, or we'd be like a pancake on the floor, or we fall over. But what we need is appropriate tension, you know, in the moment for the specific task that we're engaged with. And when there's more tension than necessary, and a lot of it's unconscious and habitual, you know, when we walk around our daily lives carrying too much tension, down the road, that can cause pain. And a lot of people don't realize that their knee pain or their back pain or their shoulder pain is actually connected to every other aspect of who they are. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that you have a bad knee or a bad back, or tendonitis or crap. You know, a lot of people come to me with these issues, physical issues. And I feel like my job is to help them connect the dots and realize that the culprit is not part of the body. And there is actually no culprit. There's no blame to be placed on anything. It's just a fact, and just observe it in a neutral way without judging, but then get curious.
Yeah.
You know, well, what else is going on? and it's often clear when people start thinking about it.
Yes.
That, oh, well, I haven't slept in the last 5 weeks and I'm so stressed because of all these recitals coming up, and I lost my assistant, and now I'm taking on someone else's job, and I'm not being paid enough, and I don't have time to spend with my family, and, you know, all these things are going on at the same time. And then suddenly, you know, someone's hand is hurting and they think the problem is the hand.
Yes.
And, you know,
everything compounds, you know. Yes. And I've discovered that I've been doing a lot of yoga, and I tell you, it's life. It's changing my life. Like the way that I get up at 4:45 in the morning.
Wow,
and
great.
I do it down in my basement, you know, back there on the other side. And it just the way that I'm able to relax and focus. And then, you know, I've had a lot of foot pain because I used to run a lot. And then I realized that I thought it was my feet, and it wasn't my feet. I thought it was my hamstrings. And I'm realizing that if I can relax and focus, I'm releasing all the tension in my hips, and that releases tension in my hamstrings, which releases my calves, which releases my feet. It's like, yeah, you know,
it's so all it's, connected.
But then, you know, it's just that habit of doing it regularly too, that makes a huge difference. You know, I feel like I'm a lot more relaxed at work, and you know, so yeah, that's it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is really connected to, you know, what I'm teaching. I love yoga, by the way, and I've been interested in yoga my whole life. And I don't practice that as much as I could, but to go back to what I was saying before about part one, it's all these issues that, you know, come up.
Yeah.
And it's the mental, the emotional, and spiritual, as in creative, you know, creativity, all those things, the artistry, the way we get in our own ways. And then part three, I'm skipping over part two right now, but part three is actually the practical how to do this thing.
Great.
That can help you. And there are some similarities with yoga.
Sure.
In that, you know, Alexander was known as the breathing man for a long time, because indirectly, we don't directly work on the breathing, but indirectly, you know, the breath is influenced by everything, and everything we think, all our emotions, everything. What's going on in the music, the tempo, the dynamics, everything we do influences and is influenced by our breath.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Alexander technique, and especially Primal Alexander, we're looking at, well, when I think this way, this happens to my body. What happens if I think differently to get a different result?
Mm-hmm.
And the breath is always part of that, even if we don't pay attention to it directly. And so then the way that we help people with Primal Alexander is, and you said it a moment ago, it's the consistency, it's the practice, and what I call primary practice, you know, practicing working on yourself. And so in Primal Alexander, we have what we call awareness etudes. And we, as musicians, we know what etudes are, right? They're
yes.
studies, they're not exercises, but they're awareness studies, awareness etudes. And I give my students just a little bit to do every day, and really a little bit goes a long way of this work. It's very simple and goes very deep. So we just do maybe 2 to 5 minutes in the morning, 2 to 5 minutes in the evening. And it's just getting curious in a specific framework, like with specific steps that I give my students, to get curious about what's actually going on in inside ourselves when we do these little experiments, little movements. You know, how am I moving my arms? How am I thinking as I move? Am I increasing tension as I move? And then we translate it to the instrument after we've learned how to really pay attention to the self.
Okay.
And we bring it to the instrument. Like, what is actually happening to me as a whole as I bring up my violin, as I draw the bow, as I bring the oboe to my face, you know, as I'm thinking about the next notes? What's happening to me as I'm thinking about the hard part coming up?
Yeah.
Or those octaves that I can never play in tune.
Yeah.
And what's happening to me as the person in the front row is having a fit, or the student in the back of the orchestra is having a conversation that they're not supposed to be having?
That's right.
So Alexander said, quote, "Mine is a method for the control of human reaction." So that's one way to think about the Alexander technique. It's, well, I'm going to get really curious. How am I responding to the things that are happening around me and what's happening inside of me, whether that's pain or anxiety? How do I respond to those things? And to learn how to respond in a way that's going to enhance ease and flow instead of tension, anxiety, and constriction.
Cool. Yeah. That's wonderful.
I think so. Yeah. And it's really fun.
Yeah.
I love this work.
Yeah. There's so much there. And like you said, even small corrections and small, like just being mindful about some of the techniques can make a big difference in the long run.
Yes.
For sure.
And it all starts with an attitude of, you know, being open to all possibility, you know, anything's possible. And let's get curious and find out what happens if I think this way or I stop doing that.
Very cool. And so you're teaching at CCM?
I was for a while. Okay. And actually, it's funny that you mentioned Bill Conable, because I know him and I've never met his ex-wife, Barbara Conable.
Right.
But she actually started the Alexander Technique teaching. There were classes at CCM for decades that she actually started. And then, you know, down the line, I inherited that program, which which turned out to be a huge blessing in disguise for me. The CCM actually cut the whole program a few years ago for financial reasons. It was hard when that happened, but if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here doing this and sharing this with people all over the world. And I never would have written my book. And
life happens and sometimes you think, oh, that's like the worst thing that could have happened. And then it ends up being a blessing.
Yes. And there's no doubt about that. So I hardly perform anymore.
Okay.
But I coach musicians. That's what I do. So I'm online.
Online. Okay.
Exclusively. I don't even do it in Cincinnati anymore. I don't use my hands. And
so
I have a wider audience. And
do you have a website that we can publicize?
Yes, thank you. It is www.artoffreedom.me.
.me. Okay, perfect.
.me, artoffreedom.me. And the book is available on Amazon.
Great.
Again, it's Make Great Music with Ease.
Yeah, and we'll make sure we put the links in the podcast description and the video description. So if any of you are interested in purchasing, you'll be able to do so.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's been really a pleasure speaking about this with you, Charles.
Yeah, it's so great to learn about you. And I wish we would have met at ASTA, because I know that you presented a session for ASTA and for Suzuki Association of America. Can you tell us a little bit about those? I don't know if you have resources on your website with some of that information, or just maybe tell us about a little bit about what you presented.
Yes, actually, I'm thinking quick, but I don't really have any resources about those workshops.
Sure.
I have tons of free things that people can find on my website.
Great.
And in my Facebook group as well. So, my YouTube channel. So there's a ton of stuff out there. But as far as these workshops, and it's a pity we didn't meet in person, but that's how it goes.
Next year.
First workshop. Sorry?
Next year.
Yes.
Yeah. In Atlanta, maybe. If you come to ASTA, ASTA will be in Atlanta next year.
Oh, aren't they doing them both together again?
A Suzuki Association only meets every 2 years.
Oh.
So I'm not sure where they are on that. But it would be great, because I think it was a really great partnership.
Yes.
And it was just neat to meet new people. And I missed you, but I got to meet some new people from, that were just Suzuki members, but not ASTA members. And but I thought it was just really great to have. It was just, the energy was really fun.
It was incredible. Yeah. There were 3,500 people there, which was, it was just amazing. It was a little overwhelming, but I was really, really happy to have the opportunity to teach two workshops, one for each one.
Yeah.
And the first one was about mind-body awareness.
Cool.
And how important that is. And I shared some of the basics of Primal Alexander and the Art of Freedom method in there. The second workshop for the Suzuki Association of the Americas was about the importance of, Suzuki's method is all about being nurtured by love.
Right.
And usually we think about that for the students, but my idea is we need to start by thinking about that for the teachers.
Ah.
Teachers need to be nurtured by love, and we need to learn how to do that for ourselves first. And this is truly what the Art of Freedom method is all about. It's about putting yourself first in the best way, with compassion and self-love. And when you do that, when you take good care of yourself, you have so much more to give to your students.
Yeah.
You have energy, you have resilience, you're more responsive and open and generous, you're more patient.
Yeah, there's so many teachers that are just burned out.
Yes.
And leaving the profession, sadly. Mm. And I think it's because they work, and they come home and they don't take care of themselves, you know, and they go to bed and get up and work again. And then it's that same cycle, and they're really missing out on, I guess, the secret, which you have, being able to have that self-care first.
You know, if I could just share one thing that's coming to my mind,
sure.
Because there is a woman who, you know, recently asked the question, you know, how can I go to work and teach and get everything done that I need to get done? And I know that's a big challenge for most teachers, if not all teachers, because you feel like there's this endless list of things you're supposed to accomplish and things you want your students to learn by a certain date, repetitoire they're supposed to cover, you know, all these things.
Then all the administrative tasks that teachers have, the paperwork, the permission forms and fundraisers and you name it. I think if teachers could just go to school and teach, that would be one thing. But there's all those other things. And then all of the, you know, bureaucratic things that we're required to do by admin, you know, trainings and online this. And, you know, there's just so many things that it's like you said before, it stacks up and then it affects us.
Yes.
In that way.
So I have just this little thing that I start with most of my students. I have what I call three magic phrases, you know, sort of tongue in cheek, but they are kind of magical when you start using them. The first one is I am free. And I'll just say up front, all three of these can be hard to believe.
Sure.
But no, you can turn them on for size.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And it is possible, or ask yourself, is it possible that I am actually free, even when I don't feel like it? I'm free to think the way I want to think. I'm free to do what I do, feel what I feel, move how I move. In this moment, I'm free to be myself. So I'm free is number one. Number two is I have time and space. And that also can feel completely not true to most people in this culture.
Yes.
But if you put right now in front of it, like right now, I have time, and then add to be myself. Right now in this moment, and this moment is all we have. Yesterday's over. Tomorrow may not come.
Right.
God willing, it will. But we don't even know what's going to happen in the next moment. So, and the next moment is now. So let's just pay attention to getting curious about, well, what's actually happening right now? Right now, I have time to get curious and pay attention to what's happening. I can be myself right now.
Yeah, and there's a lot of us that start to lose the concept of now, you know, with devices, and they're always worried about, well, this just happened, or what's going to happen. So I think that's a really a great premise.
I think it's crucial, actually, too.
Yes.
Most of our thoughts are about the past, positive or negative, or about the future, positive or negative. And as soon as we're not present, we're actually increasing the level of tension in us because, yeah, for lots of reasons, and there are actually a lot of scientific reasons for this. It's not just kind of woo-woo stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, we are made to be here right now and pay attention, you know, not just for our survival, but just because this is how we're designed. So we need to get curious about right now. So if you think I have time, or I wonder if right now I have time and space, then things can start to shift in a good way. And then the third magic phrase, which is, I always say is my favorite one, but they're all my favorites. The third one is, I don't have to do anything right now. Which also, you know, when you're running around in the middle of the day trying to herd cats and you're trying to get everything done on an incredibly long list, it feels like you have so much to do and you don't have time. But the truth is, right now, you do not have to do anything. You could just say no and not do anything. There are consequences for all of our choices.
Sure.
And very often we will choose to do things because we don't want the consequences of not doing them.
Right.
But we need to actually take responsibility for the fact that we are wanting to do whatever it is, or we wouldn't do it.
Yes.
More of us wants to do it than not wants to do it. Mm-hmm. That's not good English, but you know.
Right.
So we understand. If you realize that right now I don't have to do anything, I'm choosing to do X, Y, Z. It gives you a completely different energy. Mm-hmm. So just a thought for people to try on. What happens if instead of thinking, oh, I have to do this, you think, I don't have to do that. And I am choosing to do that because X, Y, Z.
Right. Yeah.
So taking that responsibility shifts you out of a victim mentality, and it brings you back to, I actually do have some agency here. And I feel like it's incredibly empowering to remember the truth. And, you know, they all say the truth shall set you free. In this sense, I really, really do believe that we are mostly thinking things that are not true or potentially not true, and we don't really know. And if you just stick to what you do know, which is, well, right now I'm here, and right now the truth is I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I can just be here, and that actually is enough. I am enough.
Yeah.
And I'm good enough right now. And I actually want to do XYZ, so I'm going to go do it.
Yeah. I always, I have this long list of things that I need to get done. And I always feel like those whatever they are, the tasks, you know, crisscross. And then I start one, and then I was like, oh, I got to get to this one, and, go back and forth. So, you know, this sounds like a really great way to, like, sometimes even prioritize what you would like to do first, and thinking about it in that way of, you have a long list, yes, but if it doesn't get done today, it will get done sometime, right?
And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
And if it doesn't, it doesn't. There are certain things that I think people prioritize, and they have to realize, like, I need to let that go. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain things that just need to be, you just need to let it go. And it doesn't always have to get done right away.
Yes.
And it'll be okay if it happens later.
Yeah. And even if things happen that we don't like, then we have another now moment where we get to pause and choose how we're going to respond to that next thing coming up. There's a concept in the Alexander Technique that, you know, it's not at all just in the Alexander Technique, but it's very central to it. There's this idea of a pause where, even if it's just for a split second, you get to choose to pause for a moment and not act, not do. And if you can really just own that moment and reflect for a moment, okay, well, what's actually happening to me? Do that first. Get curious about, well, what am I feeling? What's actually going on here? What am I thinking? And can I let go of that just for a split second? Then you actually are literally creating more possibilities, more potential neural pathways to go down in your brain, rather than just going down the habitual, got to do this thing, which creates so much tension, because it's very stressful.
Right.
And what if we could just pause for a moment, not let the brain go into that, just get quiet for a split second, say, well, I wonder, I wonder, what are my options here? Is there another way to look at this? Is there another path that I could go down? I really don't feel like doing that thing.
Yeah.
You know, and what's going on when I feel like I don't want to do that? My neck gets tight, my back gets tight, my shoulders are hurting, my stomach hurts. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And, well, what are the possible consequences? And you know what? I don't like this job. I'm going to quit. You know, that's one way to go that most people wouldn't even consider.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that there are always other options.
Yep.
And instead of just acting on reactive habit constantly, which is not a very happy way to live.
No, it's very negative for sure.
It is.
Very frustrating.
You get burned out.
Yes.
And instead of living that way, it really doesn't have to take a lot of time to pause and not do, to just sit there for a moment and check in with, well, what's actually going on with me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting. And you don't have to do an hour of journaling on this. It's just a matter of sitting there and not moving and just noticing or allowing natural movement to happen. It's not about not moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting curious and opening up to all possibility with a capital A and a capital P.
Yeah. This is great. This is great. So do you coach mostly performing musicians, or do you coach teachers, or do you have any public school teachers that you've coached too?
Yeah, I actually coach adults.
It doesn't matter what.
It doesn't matter what. I've taught so many educators, and you know, it's funny because before we hopped on this podcast together, I was remembering I have a lot of stories in this book. And oh, by the way, part two is all my story.
Oh, cool.
After that. And there are just lots of stories from my clients. And I was remembering a student of mine that I had a few years ago who was an orchestra teacher. And I was going to ask you before this if you know him, but I'm sure we will keep it confidential right now.
Yes.
But anyway, there's a whole page here on how learning the Art of Freedom method and Primal Alexander completely changed his approach to how he works with his orchestra kids and his students. And it's a really heartwarming story. So there are lots of educators. And I'll just say that being at the ASTA conference and the Suzuki conference was a really, really special experience for me. It's the first time I've ever been at those conferences.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I sort of dove in the deep end. You know, I joined both associations and got two workshops accepted, and I had an exhibit booth.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It is a lot.
You know, and I do everything online, and I have since 2018. So suddenly to be in the presence of 3,500 bodies in 3D.
Yes.
And just to talk person to person, face to face with so many teachers.
It's my favorite thing about conferences is the networking and just seeing people and people that you know, and you know that a conversation can just happen out of the blue, just real fast, and it'll be just like old times, and then also meeting a bunch of new people and getting to know people and you know, sharing information. I love to present, so sharing that information just makes you feel good, and just knowing that people, like, it's the most appreciative audience and people who understand what you do, and you can just bounce ideas off each other. And yeah, there's so many great things came out of that conference.
Yeah, and I have to say, I was so moved. Yes, the thing you just said was one thing. I have rarely had such an appreciative, attentive, interested audience. And wow, those workshops were some of the best I've ever had.
It was
so gratifying. And the other thing that just moved me so much was to have so many conversations. I did a lot of private consultations at my exhibit booth.
Oh, cool.
The working one-on-one, you know, asking these teachers what's going on. And they were open and sharing, you know, what they were struggling with. The things we've talked about, you know, a lot of pain issues, physical pain, a lot of performance anxiety, burnout, all kinds of things came up. But what struck me the most was that everybody there was there because they really wanted to become better teachers. Like, they wanted to learn. They were there to learn and improve themselves because they wanted to pass on the best of themselves to their students. Yeah. I found that so inspiring.
It really is.
Heartwarming.
You know, and it's not cheap to go to these things. So people are, you know, not everybody gets covered by their school to go and pay. So they're, you know, they're paying out of pocket, but that's from the heart, you know.
Definitely. It really came through.
Yeah.
So yes, I work with educators and performers and beginners and professionals and amateurs, all kinds of people. I just love people.
Yes, that's fantastic. Well, Jennifer, this has been a great conversation. So great to meet you, even if not in person, but someday.
Yes.
But I hope this has been great for all the listeners out there, just to be able to figure out see what Jennifer does, and then learn a little bit about her method and Alexander, of course. But thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Charles. It's great to meet you. And I'm sure we will meet in person someday.
That would be fantastic. So everyone, the book is, again, Make Great Music with Ease, The Secret to Smarter Practice, Confident Performance, and Living a Happier Life. And her method, The Art of Freedom. Check it out. And we'll have the links in the description. Thanks again, Jennifer, for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
And we will see you all next time on the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information about the Orchestra Teacher website, podcast, and YouTube channel, visit www.orchestrateacher.net.